Hey, this is KDOU's How Curious. I'm Rachel Hopkin, and this is not how my recording trips usually end.
Oh my god! Get me out of here! I can't stand it anymore!
And yet it had started so well just a few hours earlier.
Hi, I'm Rachel.
Rachel, I'm Jay.
Nice to meet you.
It's a pleasure. Please come in.
I just arrived at Oklahoma City's Museum of Osteology. It's the world's largest such institution that's solely dedicated to revealing and exploring the form and function of the skeletal system. Now, I promise to come back to what got me so head up later, and also want to reassure you that mine was not at all the typical experience of the museum's visitors. But what I wanted to find out first was who would come up with the idea of creating a museum of bones. Jay Villamaret is who.
I'm the owner and president of Skulls Unlimited and the Museum of Osteology. I found my first skull in the woods when at the age of 7, my brother and I stumbled across a blanket that was rolled up. We unrolled the blanket to find what we as little boys thought might be a human body. My father came along and assured us that it wasn't a human, but he saw my interest and encouraged me to collect the bones, bring it home, and together we found out that it was a domestic dog. From there, a few years later, I found a cat skull, and the differences but yet the similarities intrigued me enough that I wanted to become a lifelong collector of skulls.
Which is exactly what happened. Those two origin story skulls are now on display in the museum, so we went to see them.
That's the cat on the right and the dog on the left. And you can kind of see why I was curious.
Crazy differences.
There really were. Just take the eyes, for example. The cat's skull has huge forward-facing bone orbits around the sockets, whilst the dog's seem much more to the side of the head. By the way, you can see a photo of these two skulls, plus many others, on our website. Search for KGOU and How Curious. In any case, the young Jay was hooked.
My father would take me out to go collect roadkills, and I literally would cut the head off of a possum or a skunk or a raccoon, bring it back to the house, and we would try all means to clean the meat off the bones.
He tried a number of less than successful ways, such as using lye or burning the meat. But after a visit to the local library, remember we're talking about the 70s here, he learned that what he needed was flesh-eating beetles. They're called domestic beetles.
From there, I had to go out to a field, find a dead cow, and not knowing what I was doing, I collected as many different types of beetles as I could. So now you have to figure out which beetles are them. Because you go to a dead cow, there's a lot of beetles on them. And over time, we did figure it out, and we've cultured them down. And believe it or not, 37 years later, we still have some of the original stock of beetles to this day.
Whenever Jay found a dead animal, he'd take it home with him, prep it, and feed it to those beetles. Everything he collected fascinated him.
I collected skulls because I had a sincere interest in mammals and nature. When I found a beaver skull, I would learn as much about beavers as I could. When I found a skunk skull, I would learn as much about skunks as I could.
On graduating high school, Jay began working as an auto body technician, but was able to make extra cash on the side.
I was making a couple $100 a month just selling skulls as a hobby. Back then, that was quite the boost to your monthly income. So I remember telling my wife if we could start selling more skulls, we could probably survive and I wouldn't have to do auto body.
This is like pre-internet, so how did they know about you?
A lot of letter writing campaigns. My wife and I, we had a one-page price list and I started getting addresses.
From the start, Skulls Unlimited, as the company was called, focused on marketing its products to educational establishments.
Again, that's where my passion is. When I got my very first education sale, it was the Brookfield Zoo in Chicago. They ordered a bobcat skull from me for $18. And boy, was I excited.
When did you and your wife get together?
My wife and I met in 1981. She and I dated for about 4 years before we got married. We got married straight out of high school.
So she knew what she was getting when she got you, right?
She did know what she was getting. Even before I started dating her, when I would bring girls to my house or something, we'd go back to my bedroom and I found myself throwing a blanket over top of my skull case. But finally I realized that if she's not okay with me collecting skulls, she's not the girl for me. So by the time I met my wife, I was already over that. And she saw my skull collection. She was very interested in it. We'd go out looking for skulls together, different things like that. We were married in 1985. We started the company in 1986.
Just to be clear, no animals were harmed or killed for the business or, later on, for the museum. Over the next several decades, Skulls Unlimited continued to expand, as did Jay's personal collection. The larger it grew, the more he thought about starting a museum.
By 2003, we moved into the building that we're in now. We actually opened the museum in 2010. So it took us about 7 years to get enough specimens together. And our very first full year, we had nearly 65,000 visitors.
Are there any particular ones that you think are real crowd drawers?
By far, in my opinion, our whale that hangs in the middle of the room, our 40-foot humpback whale, is what we call the showstopper. But we have skeletons as small as hummingbirds, everything in between. We have elephant, giraffe, hippo, rhinos, anything you can imagine.
Do you make all your staff sign some kind of thing like, when I die, you can have my bones?
No, we haven't, but that's certainly an idea.
Is that where your bones will be going?
I get asked that regularly. What do I want to happen to my skeleton? And I always tell people that I wish to be a skeleton in my own museum. My family has made it very clear that won't happen.
Maybe they could do an exact copy, put you into a 3D printer or something.
That's already out there.
Yeah, we already.
I already have my own skull. It's out on display.
I couldn't miss this. Jay, along with Ashley Meerschaert, took me to see it. Ashley is the museum's education director and ops manager, and Jay describes her as his right-hand man.
Are you happy with your skull? Do you think?
No, I'm very disappointed in my skull. I always expected big brain, something. I have the most averagest skull you could ever imagine.
I think your skull is very fine.
Unlike Jay's skull, the vast majority of the bones on display in the museum are real rather than replicas, and the focus is on extant animals, though there are many skeletons of endangered species. Some are posed in quasi-naturalistic settings, so for example, you might see a koala skeleton on a tree branch. Most of the museum's exotic animal skeletons are sourced from stateside zoos, which can, Ashley explained, lead to some rather poignant encounters.
We actually do get zoologists come visit our museum and who say that was my animal. I cared for them. They'll be in tears telling us about this animal that they've taken care of for their career. They know them by name. They know their favorite food. Like they knew their favorite toys to play with. And it's like, yeah, it's so emotional. But they all have their unique stories. And I always think about that when I'm walking through the museum. It's like, you know, they lived a whole life before they came to us.
Ahead of time, I'd been a bit worried that I might find the museum's contents macabre, but I didn't at all, though I did find some of them disturbing, including one which is labelled as the six-pack turtle.
That's one that's very impactful for our guests to come and see the effects of plastics and the effects that humans have had on animals.
The shell of the turtle, instead of being the usual ovoid shape, is more like an hourglass, and it's displayed with a plastic ring from a six-pack around its middle.
So this animal would have gotten the ring caught around it when it was young, and then its body grew because it was still living, but you can see how it was not able to change the shape of the plastic.
I mean, it looked like it lived like...
He lived like that. He lived a full life. That was found on the bank of a pond.
After spending a good long while looking around the museum, I asked if I could see how the bones were prepared before they got here. So Jay and Ashley took me over to the adjacent processing building, which led, in pretty short order, to this.
Oh, get me out of here!
To be honest, it's not a bad day at all. That's
I
a
can't
really
even
good
believe
day.
That really is like what it smells like without any smell. Yeah.
So a not very impressive performance on my part. In my defense, I would say that I have what I describe as Princess and the Pea syndrome, i.e. a very low tolerance for any kind of sensory discomfort, loud noises, harsh temperatures, and, to me in this case, the excruciating stench of death and putrefaction. But once I got home and had pulled myself together, I felt I really did need to learn more about the behind-the-scenes work and hear what those feasting beetles sounded like. They kindly allowed me back, but this time I had How Curious managing editor Logan Layden in tow. As Jay and Ashley took us into the dreaded processing building, we were greeted by Carrie Welsh, the processing manager.
Were you here when I came last time?
I was.
Yes, I'm sorry, you're all a blur. So Logan's come back to make sure I stay upright or in fact take over the recording if I can't hack
it. We're going to keep you upright.
It's not feeling as bad as last time.
You haven't went in that room yet.
No, I haven't.
That room is the dreaded bug room, and I'd already been warned that it's the smelliest part of this whole operation. But whilst I was still acclimatizing, Carrie and I kept chatting.
Can you just talk me through what happens when a skeleton arrives here, or a body?
Okay, so let's just say it's a complete animal.
Okay.
So typically we receive them via the mail. They just get mailed to us frozen, and they'll get received back here. My floor manager out here will do the administrative part of writing them up and inspecting them and things like that. Then they're frozen for 96 hours. Mm-hmm. That's a preventative measure. There's not much that can survive being deeply frozen for 96 hours. So it's a safety protocol for us.
Okay.
And then they're thawed out for a couple days. And then one of my flensers cuts them down. And if they can pinch it, they cut it off. And then the specimen's dried for a couple days, and then it's given to the bugs. Once they're done with the bugs, they'll be degreased, and then they'll be sanitized, and then they'll come out here to the finishing side.
This includes taking all the newly cleaned up bones and putting them back together in skeleton form. It can be a very fiddly job. Imagine working on the bones of a hummingbird. But that's where master articulator Clark Griffith comes in. Clark's also a guitarist, which surely helped him develop highly dexterous fingers.
What's been your proudest achievement in terms of articulating back together?
I don't know if I have a proudest achievement. We've done a lot of stuff. I've probably articulated more skeletons and more species than anybody else alive today.
While I've been talking with Clark, Logan had been off exploring.
Logan, what are you doing? What are you doing?
I'm ready.
There was no putting it off any longer. It was time for the bug room.
I'm intensely mouth-breathing.
I made it as far as the doorway and remained there, quivering, as Logan bravely went inside.
She made it a lot further than she did last time.
Yeah?
So, this is Tyler. His full-time job in life is to take care of my bugs.
How do you fall into something like this? I mean, what an interesting job.
I want to go into forensics, so it kind of gives me hands-on experience to work with them, work with the friends, you know?
What am I looking at here?
They're flesh-eating beetles, dermestid beetles. They eat and drink at the same time. You spray the flesh with water and they collect the moisture and kind of break away the tissue, and it kind of adds to their little colonies in here.
People always ask us, like, where do you find these? Where are these even found in the world? These are found all
everywhere.
Over. So they work just like little vultures. They go around from carcass to carcass, eating the tissue, so putting it back in our environment.
And the general public doesn't get to usually see this part of the operation.
No.
This isn't part of the normal.
No, we do have videos that play in the museum that show the behind the scenes process. We also have a little example tank in the museum lobby. Today they're cleaning a horse and a young goat.
I asked Logan to get his mic as close to the beetles as possible. I really wanted to hear what they sounded like. I think I was hoping for something like this. But what he got was this. We couldn't get anything out of them, though to be fair, it was a pretty noisy building. Oh well, still, thanks to Pixabay for that flesh-eating zombie sound effect there. Meanwhile, Logan was asking about the donation process.
I can't pull up with a couple of dead animals in my
people
car.
People do
like,
all
you
the
go.
Time come
so,
and ask us
people
that.
People do all the time. Right?
Yeah.
And one of our thought processes is not to waste things. So if there's anything viable, we're going to process it.
Can you donate yourself to the museum?
There's probably only one person left on Earth that can donate himself to the museum, and that's Jay.
He's told me that his family won't let him.
Probably won't well, allow that. No.
If he had his way, he'd be on display.
That is what he'd say, yeah.
It was time to be winding down.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Good to meet you. If you have any more questions, I'll be there. Very good.
It is interesting how quickly it does become tolerable.
Yeah, now
you're right. I don't really notice it.
Even so, on arriving home, I stuffed all of my clothes into the hottest wash possible and had a very long and highly scented bubble bath. I also noticed that for days afterwards, I couldn't look at my two cats without imagining the skulls beneath their beautiful furry faces. Thanks to all of the contributors to this episode, plus all of the other staff at the Museum of Osteology whose voices didn't appear here. How Curious is a KGOU public radio production. As you heard earlier, the managing editor is Logan Layden. David Gray composed our theme music, and I'm Rachel Hopkin. And if you have an Oklahoma-related question or idea for a future episode, please let us know via curious@kgou.org.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.